Welcome to this Peer Voice activity. To access the entire activity, including supporting material, go to www.peervoice.com/PBV. This activity is supported by education funding from Janssen Pharmaceutica NV. Welcome to this Peer Voice activity on myasthenia gravis. This activity comprises two presentations featuring Professor Nils Erik Gilhus and Dr. Sarah Hoffman. At any time during this presentation, you may download supporting materials and share this activity with colleagues.
Hello, I'm Nils Erik Gilhus from the University of Bergen and the Haukeland University Hospital in Bergen, Norway. Welcome to this activity titled Disruption at the Neuromuscular Junction, Relevance of Autoantibodies to Therapy in Generalized Myasthenia Gravis. In this first presentation titled The Neuromuscular Junction in Generalized Myasthenia Gravis, What Causes Defective Transmission? I will review what is happening at the neuromuscular junction in such patients with a generalized myasthenia. This is the neuromuscular junction as it looks, with the nerve terminal and with the muscle membrane. You see that the muscle membrane has extensive foldings to increase the surface area. This is, of course, a three-dimensional structure, and everything is filled in with tissue, with fluids, with the important signal molecule. You see that the acetylcholine receptors are located extracellularly or with an extracellular part in the postsynaptic membrane, and they are functionally linked to MASC molecules and LRP4 molecules also located in the muscle membrane. With acetylcholine receptor antibodies, the acetylcholine receptors are either blocked or they are degraded through cross-linking by the antibodies, or they are disrupted by complement activation through the antibody binding. This leads to a dysfunction of the receptors, less flux of ions across the membrane, and less or poorer muscle contraction. Binding to the by antibodies to the MASC leads to a reduced clustering of acetylcholine receptors, and also LRP4 antibodies may have functional consequences. There are additional antigens intracellularly in the muscle, such as titin and ryanodine receptor. Antibodies to such structures do occur in myasthenia, but they do not have direct functional consequences. However, they may be used as additional biomarkers. This shows in more detail the acetylcholine receptor with its 5 subunits, a channel in the middle. It's the region MIR, where most of the antibodies bind, and it is binding sites for acetylcholine. And you see that also that the various actions of the IgG antibodies binding, they are binding complement, they are cross-linking molecules, and they are blocking for acetylcholine binding. And this shows how there is a functional interaction between the acetylcholine receptors, MASC, and LRP4. They have signaling between them, and also acetylcholine esterase is located at the junction and can be interfered with therapeutically. The binding of acetylcholine receptor antibody leads to a sequence of events intracellularly that can be examined both in vitro and by experimental studies. And these events can lead to further weakening of the muscle, but they can also include compensatory mechanisms counteracting the negative effect on muscle cell function by the antibody. This is an illustration of the possible biomarkers, antibodies against titin and ryanodine receptor, And you see that these antibodies can be used to classify patients as they are mostly in patients with a thymoma or with late onset, as shown on the top part of the slide. And at the bottom, you see that these antibodies occur more frequently with severe disease. So they may be used as an indication for more active immunosuppressive therapy. The antibodies binding to acetylcholine receptors induce structural changes in the postsynaptic membrane with less folding in the postsynaptic membrane. A big question is if this is permanent change or if it is reversible. It is, in fact, clearly reversible, but it's not known if it's 100% reversible after long-standing severe disease. So these structural changes, at least they support an active early treatment to try to avoid them, at least avoiding them, and in specifically avoiding them being irreversible. In the neuromuscular junction, in myasthenia, there is, as you've seen, authentication of the synaptic folding and so the synaptic clefts. It is, in addition, an increase in muscle-specific stem cell and with an enhanced stem cell differentiation, although somewhat delayed maturation. There is an overexpression of muscle repair protein, and very importantly, it is an upregulation of acetylcholine receptor production, seen also as an increased amount of mRNA for acetylcholine receptor. And its compensatory increased vesicle release of acetylcholine presynaptically. And so antibodies are helpful in finding subgroups and of myasthenia gravis, and the aim is to link this to optimal therapeutic options and choices for patients. Although we are now discussing the neuromuscular junction, you should always remember that myasthenia is a generalized disease that the lymphoid tissue throughout the body produces the acetylcholine receptor antibodies. Thymus is involved in those with these antibodies, and the cause of myasthenia gravis lies outside the junction itself. It's the genetic and it's unknown environmental factors. This therapy in myasthenia gravis is linked to the autoantibody pathogenesis, what is occurring at the neuromuscular junction, but it involves the immune system also in a more general way, and it's not specific for the myasthenia gravis immune response. And you see on this slide how the therapy acts also on the bone marrow, on circulating T and B cells, and in thymus with thymectomy at the core treatment. There is an association between acetylcholine receptor antibody concentration and clinically myasthenia gravis treatment and improvement in patients. It is not, it's far from absolute. It's much debated, but I believe that antibodies should be checked regularly to see if the brain concentration increases or decreases. This Dutch data shows that with a decrease of more than 50% in acetylcholine receptor antibody concentration, there is an increased chance of improvement between 4 and 5 times increased chance, whereas an increase in the concentration in the patient led to a much reduced chance of improvement, as you see 0.3 on this slide. And we did a similar observations and published them several years ago, showing a significant association between the development of disease and antibody concentration. This is probably even more clear for MASC antibodies. You should remember that myasthenia is not only muscle weakness. In the patient perspective, they have many symptoms, and not all of them are directly linked to the muscle weakness. course, the muscle weakness is the focus for this talk, and the neuromuscular junction is the focus of this talk. But you should just remember that the patient perspective is wider than just muscle weakness. My conclusions is that myasthenia gravis is a reversible disease and has a relatively good prognosis. Patients can recover fast and slowly, and they do so regularly, and they can improve after many years. Some patients have chronic fatigue, and this fatigue is in part linked to the muscle weakness, but sometimes there are also other aspects of that fatigue and makes it difficult to treat. Most importantly, in the neuromuscular junction, acetylcholine receptors are highly dynamic with a complex regulation, and they are influenced by some of the immunosuppressive therapies that we're giving. The neuromuscular junction changes with age, can structurally change with injuries. And you should remember that structure and function are not always linked. So the key message of this talk is that myasthenia gravis is a reversible disease. Repair in the neuromuscular junction is ongoing, and a therapeutic response with improved function at the neuromuscular junction can occur also in chronic long-term myasthenia gravis. Thank you for watching this first talk, and stay tuned for the second presentation by Dr. Sara Hochman on why identifying autoantibody specificity in generalized myasthenia gravis is relevant to therapy. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Sara Hochman. I'm a senior neurologist at the Charité University Medicine Berlin, Germany, with a research and clinical focus on myasthenia gravis. I welcome you to the second presentation titled Why Identifying Autoantibody Specificity in Generalized MG is Relevant to Therapy. In this presentation, we will review why determination of autoantibody specificities has important implications for therapy and clinical outcomes in patients with GMG. I would like to start my presentation with a brief historical perspective. So the first case studies that can safely be attributed to myasthenia gravis were published in the late 19th century, such as this one published by Friedrich Jolly, who worked here at the Charité and gave myasthenia gravis its name. The point I want to make here is that at that time, all MG patients were seronegative because the acetylcholine receptor autoantibody was only discovered in 1976, MuSK autoantibodies in 2001, and LRP4 autoantibodies in 2011. So what does autoantibody distribution in autoimmune MG look like today? This is data from the German-wide myasthenia gravis registry with over 1,800 MG patients included. We can see that a good 3/4 of patients are positive for AChR antibodies, 4% are MuSK positive, and 2% are LRP4 antibody positive. And almost one in every five patients remains seronegative. So one reason for the lack of autoantibody detection might be that they are simply not tested. The data presented here also stems from the German MG registry, and it shows that AChR antibodies are always tested when autoimmune MG is suspected. However, MuSK autoantibodies are not tested in a good quarter, and LRP4 autoantibodies are not tested in a good half of patients. So we might be able to increase autoantibody detection by just testing more with what we have at hand in clinical routine, namely ELISA and RIA assays. In addition, more sensitive methods might help to increase antibody detection. Isabel Light and her research group from Oxford were the first to develop a live cell-based assay for the detection of AChR antibodies. What they did was they expressed acetylcholine receptors at a high density with a clustering protein rhepsin on HEX cells, and then incubated these cells with patient serum. And using this assay method, AChR antibodies could be detected in 66% of previously seronegative MG patients. And live cell-based assays are also now available for MuSK and LRP4 positive MG. The effector mechanism of classic SHRV positive Mg, they are well known and they are threefold. First, the functional blockade of the acetylcholine receptor by the antibodies. Second, the autoantibodies are capable of cross-linking acetylcholine receptors and thereby giving the signal for endocytosis of the receptors. And thirdly, the complement-mediated membrane damage. ACHRB are primarily of the IgG1 subtype and thus able to activate the complement cascade via the classical pathway, which leads to the formation of the membrane attack complex and consecutive postsynaptic membrane damage. And the knowledge of the involvement of the complement system in ACHRB positive Mg has led to the investigation of targeted complement inhibition with therapeutic monoclonal antibodies directed against C5, for which we have positive phase 3 data for eculizumab, ravulizumab, and since last year also zilucoplan, which have all been approved for the treatment of ACHRB-positive generalized MG. The second novel mode of action in the therapeutic landscape of MG is FcRn inhibition. So IgG are subject to a physiological recycling mechanism mediated by the neonatal Fc receptor. And if the neonatal Fc receptor is blocked, IgG is increasingly degraded in the lysosomes, and therefore the total IgG level, including, of course, pathogenic autoantibodies, decreases. And I like to compare the effect with immunoadsorption at a cellular level without the need for a central venous catheter. So let's look at one of the FcRn inhibitors, namely efgartigimod. It showed a fast positive response in ACHRB positive generalized MG in the ADEPT trial. The study protocol was designed so that patients received efgartigimod once weekly on 4 consecutive weeks. And they had to clinically deteriorate before they could be retreated, which explains the increase in MG-ADL score at the end of the treatment cycle. And since pathogenic autoantibodies are reduced by FcRn inhibition, regardless of the effector mechanism, the ADEPT trial also allowed for ACHRB negative MG patients to be included. And this could be MuSK positive, LRP4 positive, or seronegative MG patients. In reality, the vast majority was seronegative. And what we can see is that we also had a high MG-ADL and QMG responder rate in this patient subgroup. But what we can also see is that the placebo effect was also high in this patient subgroup, which is why efgartigimod was only approved for the treatment of ACHRB positive generalized MG. In May last year, phase 3 data on the FcRn inhibitor rozanolixizumab was published. Again, there was a fast positive response to FcRn inhibition by rozanolixizumab. And in this trial, MuSK patients were also allowed to be included. And in the sub-analysis, it could be shown that MuSK antibody-positive MG patients had a very good response, an even better response compared to the overall study population. So that rozanolixizumab was approved for the treatment of ACHRB and MuSK-positive gMG. The CD20 inhibitor rituximab has not yet shown its efficacy in a phase 3 trial. However, it plays a very relevant role in clinical practice when treating MG patients, and rituximab is used across all autoantibody constellations. But studies have shown that especially MuSK-positive MG patients show good and sustained response to B-cell depletion with rituximab. So what does autoantibody-specific therapy in generalized MG look like in the present? I'd like to start by saying that pyridostigmine, prednisolone, and azathioprine are still fundamental to the basic therapy of MG. And in addition, a targeted complement inhibition can be used in ACHRB-positive MG. FcRn inhibition is currently approved for ACHR and MuSK antibody-positive MG. And we use B-cell depletion, especially in MuSK-positive MG patients, but also in ACHR antibody-positive and seronegative MG patients. And what might autoantibody-specific therapy in MG look like in the future? My not entirely unjustified hope is that targeted complement inhibition will also be used in LRP4 positive and seronegative MG, because new data shows that the complement system is also involved in these autoantibody constellations. I really, really hope that FcRn inhibition will be used in across all autoantibody constellations in the future. And coming back here to my comparison of FcRn inhibition to immunoadsorption, we know that immunoadsorption works in all autoantibody constellations. So why shouldn't FcRn inhibition? Only that we need more data, and we also, I think, need more courage to allow, especially for seronegative MG patients, to be included in interventional trial. The medical need is there. And B-cell depletion will certainly also be used more in LRP4 positive MG patients. There's still few data on this, but this will be changing in the future. And the last slide is intended to give you an overview of the current and emerging targeted therapies for generalized MG with the different modes of action and the drug names. And with that, I thank you very much for your attention.
This has been an activity published by Peer Voice.